Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Oh, Kelly, I feel so sad. Although the wonders of modern technology is just never ceases to amaze me. So I'm not in studio. I don't get to see your adorable face.
It's so funny because I'm thinking I could be totally naked and you'd have no idea. Like I could literally be naked in the studio and you'd have no clue. So funny.
So I want to tell you that I'm actually on a deserted island on a beach, also suntanning naked with a Mai Tai next to me. But the truth is I am at home in bed reclining on ice because I friggin' pulled my back out on Friday. Oh, you know what the worst part is? I am not a couch potato at all.
No.
Like resting and relaxing is like my mother said no to that when I was a child. There was no room for rest, relax, all that stuff. Now, I happen to be a really active person anyway, so it's not all childhood trauma.
Yeah. But
I have been enclosed, encased in whatever, just down and out now since Friday. I pushed it on Friday and Saturday and did things, but the worst part is sitting up. So driving, sitting, the transition from lying down to standing up and from sitting, it's just excruciating.
Can you like binge watch Netflix, anything fun? You know how you always feel guilty if it's like, but now it's like, all right, you don't have another choice, so at least you can maybe enjoy it.
You know, I was thinking that yesterday, and you know what I did instead? I'm just crazy.
Work.
I got 10 hours of continuing education done.
That's actually pretty smart.
I have all those units I have to get, so
you might
as well just pound them out.
Exactly.
Right? No, I haven't done that yet. So maybe a little bit later this afternoon. But actually, one thing that's amazing too about our life circumstances here with Skyping and FaceTiming and all that. Well, there's downsides to being so connected in those ways. But a lot of my clients are not minding just talking to me either on the phone or FaceTime or Skyping, even though it's not totally HIPAA compliant. You know, people can make that decision themselves if they're comfortable with that
incredible
method. So. Yeah, it's like, it's great. And here we are.
Yes, exactly. I feel like you're here.
Perfect.
I'm just not looking at you.
How about you, my darling? How are you?
I am not getting any freaking sleep is what's going on. I'm like a walking zombie. Kids, two came in. If I had more kids, they'd probably hop in the bed too. It's like that freaking song. There's two in the bed and the little one said, like I'm getting kicked out over. It's ridiculous. And I'm not kidding. I don't understand like why my kids don't sleep. It's like they could run a casino. I've thought about that. Like they might as well. They're up at those hours. It's ridiculous.
And I will train them because I love casinos.
That's what I'm saying. I have a feeling my younger one's going to be in my Adele. Like I just know it. I'll be in bed at like 9. He'll be out partying. It's hilarious. But yeah, I'm not getting any sleep.
Oh, and poor thing. I know that just sucks.
I don't get it. I'm going to have to drug this kid. No, people are going to think I'm serious. But like, this is just, it's rough. But yeah, no, other than that, everything else is okay.
But you do all the things like you try lavender and all the things that help you soothe. But it doesn't really matter. You could fall asleep if you were on your own. It's just that they keep.
Oh, it's not me. Oh, I have no problem. Thank God.
Got it.
I'm so exhausted that like I hit the pillow and it's goodbye. I mean, but then it's like a kick in the head. Hello, at 3 a.m.
All right. Well, I should just take your kids. I told you that for a year because I don't sleep anyway. So there you go.
Don't
tempt me. Perfect system. You get the rest.
And you get my Rugrats. Perfect.
And I get the Rugrats.
Exactly.
But we're going to have fun with the Rugrats in a couple weeks when we all go camping again, this time with your children.
They are going to love it. I cannot even tell you. Like, this is like for them. Like, jump in the dirt. They can scream, run around, s'mores. I mean, they're not going to want to leave. It's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome. Yay. So if you are wanting to give us a call today for today's show, we're going to tell you what we've got lined up for you. Please do so at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And of course, you can send those emails anytime to Doc and Therapist, but at gmail.com. So last week, that was so much fun. Okay,
so
we had Billy Koch, the founder of Little Red Feather Racing, and Michelle Yu, who they talked to us about fractional racehorse ownership. But beyond that, I think it really was helpful, at least, you know, I hope so for you,
yes,
to debunk some of those myths about cruelty and mistreatment of racehorses.
Absolutely.
How'd you end up feeling about that?
Yes. So Billy and Michelle, those of you who don't know, they do the show before us about horses and their company. So they're super nice. And I've always been a little bit resistant to, he's always offered us tickets, and I've always been a little bit resistant because I'm such an animal lover and you hear these stories. So it was super helpful to walk away feeling a little bit better that, like, okay, the horses are taken care of. It's okay. They treat them really well and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I thought that was a super show with really great people.
Just imagine getting a pedicure and a manicure every couple days and a massage, things rubbed, everything groomed for you. I mean, like, what kind of life? And they love to race. So I just thought it was amazing.
Really good show.
So promise me someday you and your hubby are going to come out and do this with me.
Okay. I think I can make that. I think I can make that promise. So, and then I'll see for myself how the animals are. I mean, I said to him, can I pet the horses after? Like, that's what I want to do. And he's like,
yeah,
absolutely. So, yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So moving along, today we have a great, exciting guest today, J.B. Glossinger, The Sacred Six. He's the author of The Sacred Six, the simple step-by-step process for focusing your attention and recovering your dreams. He's a self-described archaeologist of life who has studied human potential, performance, and happiness for over 40 years. He doesn't look old enough to have done this.
I know.
We're going to find out more about that. He's lying. We're kidding. Okay. He is widely beloved as the Morning Coach with a daily podcast and has been downloaded 17 million times over the past 7 years.
Wow.
A sought-after motivational speaker and coach with an international following, JB is also a mastermind group leader and a syndicated columnist for the Business Journals, a 43-paper network. Wow. He holds advanced degrees in business and metaphysics, but credits his street education from black eyes to near bankruptcy with providing the life-changing lessons that inspired the keys to personal transformation he shares with audiences, coaching clients, and readers worldwide. Welcome, JB.
Hey, 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 guys. Good to be here. How are you doing?
We're awesome. You have an MBA and a PhD. Okay, you're too smart for us. I don't know if we can.
Well, and he sounds happy, too.
You know, I got to tell you, there's something funny about those letters. I don't use them a lot anymore. You know, God bless the PR people that made me sound amazing, right? I
mean, right.
It's like, I want to meet this person. Who is that? But at the end of the day, you know, it's funny. I got to tell you real quick, those letters that were a part of my life, there was actually a lot of suffering, especially the MBA. I thought that is what I needed to be successful in life. And so I got that MBA, and it really, nowadays I like to get rid of the letters and just be JB.
Oh, that's
okay.
Nice. And what does JB stand for, by the way? I'm dying to know.
I could be cool and say James Bond, but I'm not that cool. So it's actually James Bryan.
I love it. I love it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, well, you know what? We love guests with heart, because that's really what our show's about.
Yes.
Having heart and learning about really cool things. So I am dying to know what your journey was and what inspired you to write this book.
Well, it's crazy. It's crazy, Dr. Deborah. We've had, many people have kind of been where I've been. I went through the corporate world. I thought that, you know, I did what they told me. I come from a very blue-collar family in Indiana, and I didn't really... We weren't taught wealth and, you know, how to get ahead or any of that. And I didn't know much. So I went the traditional route of college and getting degrees. And I worked all the way up through sales and actually started running an aerospace company. But after I did all that and I was really feeling the accomplishment at an age, you know, in my young 30s, I was sitting in my office and I'm like the most empty person in the world. It was miserable. It was, you know, work all week, watch the TV shows at night, Survivor or whatever, mm-hmm. and then drink from Friday to Sunday to try to escape and start it all over again Monday.
Yeah.
And I was so angry at myself. I was so angry because I was like, who are you to be frustrated when you have everything that most people don't have?
Mm.
So it was a real dark period.
And so, okay, and so what was the catalyst? Like, what was the shift?
Well, what the big shift was I started to realize that I needed to look and see what was really important because something was missing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started to study more of the deeper aspects of life, of spirituality, started studying the world's religions, and just trying to figure out what was going on. But what really led me to the breakthrough was when I looked at my values and I found that freedom, faith, family, those are three of my top ones, but freedom was a big one. And all my decisions I made up into my life to that point were not based on those values. They were based on creating more money for me. Mm. And so as I added more money and I rose through the ranks of corporate, I started making more money, but my freedom was going away.
Yes.
So I had to figure out a way to break free, because that was the quiet desperation that Thoreau talks about. That's where I was sitting. I was just in massive desperation.
I feel like so many people can relate to what you're saying. It's like they're sort of going through the motions, and then on the weekend they feel like they're escaping, and then it's like sort of back to this rat race. So
we're sold such a bill of goods about that the capitalistic world of make the money, and your life is going to be happy. And that's so not true for most people.
Yeah, and that's what's so crazy is that's what I found out. You know, as I started making more money, you know, I just spent more, and, you know, I tried to justify it, and that's where I got the real guilt feelings, because I just was like, who, you know, it's the old, you know, people were starving in Africa that my mom used to say every time when I didn't want to finish the food, right?
Right, sure.
And I'd be like, I got a great job here, a great career, I travel all over the world, I'm buying and selling jungle jet. I mean, I had a great thing going, but at the end of the day, I was miserable. So was it really that great?
Exactly. Yeah. So, okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the Sacred Six. So can you tell us a little bit what's the meaning of sacred and where does the Sacred Six come from?
Yeah, so in order for me, so I've used this process. So what I did is I developed the process, and it took me a long time to figure it out. And basically there's some history to it. I'll tell you that in a minute. But I needed something that was going to change my life to allow me to do what I was passionate about and to live my dreams. And so one day I was listening to an Earl Nightingale album, okay, and it was actually on tape, so I'm dating myself, but Earl Nightingale was one of the original founders of personal development. And he told this story about this gentleman named Ivy Lee, that Napoleon Hill used to tell this story. It's like this long-lost story. So Ivy Lee would go in and talk to companies, and he went in and talked to Charles Schwab, which we all know now. But at the time, Charles Schwab was running the steel industry. So I'm sitting there listening to this Earl Nightingale on this tape years ago. And so he's telling the story, and I'm going, man, this is Napoleon Hill, Thinking Grow Rich. I've never heard this before. And he says, well, Ivy Lee told Charles Schwab this. He says, listen, he goes, I got the best thing for you. And Charles Schwab says, listen, I don't need any more knowing. I need more doing. Okay.
Uh-huh.
He says, well, here's what you do. Write down the top six things you need to do today, right? Write them down, and I want to see them. And they looked at him together and goes, okay, let's prioritize them. And he goes, I want you to start with number one and not move to number two until number one's finished. And then if you get to the end of the day and you don't have five and six done, just move them to the next day and start over. So he took this, and this is back in the 1920s, he took this formula and started to apply it, and it literally changed his company so much that that little 10-minute meeting, he wrote a check for $25,000, which is about $250,000 to Ivy Lee to thank him. And Charles Schwab says, really, this is why the Carnegie steel mills and everything blew up. So I'm listening to this going, oh my gosh, this is about 15 years ago. And I started to apply it in my life. And then I read Brian Tracy's Eat the Frog. And then I developed a whole life plan around that original concept. And Napoleon Hill told that story about Ivy Lee. So that's where it comes from.
Mm.
That was the history of it.
That's incredible.
And you mentioned that you're the archaeologist of life. So can you tie that in for us, the archaeologist, your interest in that, and the Sacred Six?
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was little. I wanted to be Indiana Jones. And my grandma took me to see a Northwestern professor, you know, and I was like, I want to be Indiana Jones.
Sure.
And I'll never get, with the hat, the whip. And I was about 12 years old, and I'll never forget him saying, look, JB, if you're going to be an archaeologist, you need to know a little bit about everything in life, because being an archaeologist isn't about finding things, it's about raising money. And you have to be interesting to everybody that you meet. And so I took that to heart years ago, and I started to learn a little bit about everything, and that's where that knowledge came in from Earl Nightingale, because I was studying personal development and happiness, and that was one of the pathways. So it goes back a little bit to that.
Oh, that's so neat. Wow.
It is so neat. Okay, we'll call you Indiana Jones the second, just for fun.
Okay, great.
So, okay.
Oh, but then you have to like those snakes, though. Remember the snakes?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
I'm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, so I'm a golfer. I golf every day, so I see a lot of snakes. They don't bother me too much.
It's so funny because they don't bother me either, and I feel like I'm rare, because most people are like just run for the hills. Like, but I don't know. It doesn't bother me either. It's kind of funny. I went hiking the other day up here on a trail. I'm in California, and I just saw, you know, one of, I don't know if it was a rattlesnake or whatever. And it's like, I didn't really flinch, but I think most people go nuts. So you and I need to stick together, JB.
Exactly. I'm good with that.
So most of the snakes out there that you see are not poisonous. People just freak out.
That's
it probably
true.
Wasn't a rattler, because I think you would have known that, and then you should be scared.
Oh, is the rattlesnake the poisonous one?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think it goes all the way back. We've been conditioned from, you know, if anybody was in the biblical religions, you know, remember the snake was the evil one.
Yes.
So that goes all the way back.
So funny.
You know, your kids... Kelly, I know another reason you're going to love Tiffany. She adopted a snake. There was an underprivileged snake, so to speak. So she took it on, and it's her pet.
I love this girl.
This is my daughter, JB. She's just such an amazing
She just
lady.
Sounds so much fun. I absolutely have to meet her. Like, it's
you
funny.
Will. You will.
Actually, it's ask so her if awesome. She wants to go camping with us.
You know, she's willing to come down from Grass Valley. I doubt it, but we'll see. We'll find out.
Okay.
So anyway, so off we were just segueing to the snakes because that was fun. JB, so I do want to ask you a question, though. This is what really curious to me. We're going to go a little off topic here because, you know, a lot of people might be thinking, yeah, sure, it's easy to say, you know, well, you can't make everything about money and yada, yada, yada. But obviously we do need to make money to live in this world. So how do you tie in the sacred six, and then we're going to ask you more about that also, with the need to make money? Because you can't have one without the other, I would think.
No, and it's very important that you have some structure in life and that you have income. Because if you don't have income, what happens is you start to go into lack mode and you just do things for money, and it doesn't work anyways, because then you're in desperation. People smell that. If you're building a business or something and you're desperate, people know that, you know? Mm-hmm. So what you've got to do is you've got to make sure you have a goal, or you're oriented, like in the Sacred Six, it's about the mission, and you're going that direction. So let's say you're a school teacher and your passion is, you know, I don't know, arts and crafts, right? Well, you could be doing that business on the side and still be a teacher. There's nothing wrong with that. I think sometimes when people go on and start talking about lifestyle design, which I'm an expert at, and that's really what I'm known for, is a lot of people, you know, say, oh, well, like you said, you know, you can't make things just about money, or, if you don't have money, you can't do it. But the truth is, if you just spend a little bit of time on what you love every day, and eventually you can turn it into something, mm-hmm. that's what I suggest, because it just gives you hope. And there's a lot of people that don't have any hope at all.
Oh, that's so true.
Yes.
That's such a good point. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. So,
no problem.
Can you tell us what the Sacred Six are?
Yeah. So the Sacred Six is really about the things that you need to get done, and what you need to do is really focus in on the certain aspects of life. So this process, the good thing about the book, what it had to do for me was to help me define what it was, you know, and So basically, in life, you need what's called a mission, which is the next experience you're going to go after. It's not not the Archangel Gabriel coming down and singing and blaring trumpets, but it's the next experience, you know, the next big thing. I coach a lot of people in morning coach, and have for years, and, you know, we have people that, you know, have got that diagnosis that they don't want to hear, you know, hey, mm-hmm. I'm now... I've got a battle to fight with cancer. Everything changes then. So the mission is changes. So that's one piece of it. And then you have what's called the values, and that's what I talked about, me finding out what's important to me. And that's the second part of the system, is understanding what's important to you, or the process. Then you have goals, which are the things you're going to go after to help you get to your mission. And then you have projects, and then daily tasks. And really, that's a flow of the Sacred Six. It's not the Sacred Six. The Sacred Six are those six daily tasks that you're going to do every day that are going to take you to your mission.
Okay.
Ah,
I like
okay.
this. It's very intriguing. It's like,
It is. It's kind of, like you said, it's like a life plan kind of creation,
sure.
lifestyle design.
It is. This is a process that anybody can use. to really go after it. And that's what's we're already seeing it happen. It's great. We just put the book out and we got 52 awesome 5-star reviews on Amazon, nothing less, which is so cool. But great. People are applying it and it works. It works. It's simple. And that's what I wanted it to be, very simple and doable.
So I want to know, too, because I'm sure there's listeners out there who really have a hard time setting goals. And so you sound very, you know, you have a lot of experience in this. And I'm wondering if you can kind of give maybe a rundown of the best ways for people to set goals.
Well, and I'm cool with that. The issue that I have with the whole personal development industry, self-help, whatever you want to call it, is that, and this is what happened to me, nobody ever helped me get clear first before I set my goals. I really didn't know what I wanted, right? And so I never did a values analysis. I never sat down and said, what is my next experience? So most of my goals were material in nature. Now, I don't mind material goals. I mean, I golf every day now. I've been able to build my life, so I'm done by 9:30. I go to the country club. I have nice cars. I have some houses in Colombia, and I've been able to build a really nice life over the last 10 years. But the thing is, I you got to be very cautious of setting your goals for those material acquisition things when it isn't the direction you want to go. Once I figured out my values and recognized freedom, then I was able to build something that allowed me to get my time back, which is, I think, the most valuable thing. And then my goals were totally different. They had nothing to do with material acquisition. They had to do with growth and business and personal growth and spiritual development. That's what led to my success. So the reason people have problems setting goals and achieving them is they're out of alignment with what's important to them and their values and their mission. So they go, you know, get the new Q7 from Audi because they want something cool and satisfying in their life. Nothing wrong with that. But what happens is that goal puts financial pressure on them so they can't have freedom to go do what they want to do.
I see. That makes sense. Sure.
Totally, yeah. And there is so some element to freedom, though, with making a good living as well. I mean, we do have more options to do things if we are earning money simultaneously.
100%. See, that's the issue when I have this conversation, because I'm not assaulting materialism at all. I love it. I want to make more money every day. That's what I do. I'm a business guy. So it's not that. It's just to get over that hump. Like me, I was broke. I was broke, and poor. And the reason I was broke and poor, I had no money, and actually lost my house was because I didn't understand these concepts. I didn't have a plan. My goals were all a mess, and I didn't know what direction to go. And so every time I took a step, I made some money. I spent it because I was trying to buy happiness, which you can't buy. And at the end of the day, I was never building any freedom into my life, which was what was important to me. Right. There are people that don't need freedom, that are doing nursing or doing things they love, you know, and they're happy going to the hospital 60 hours a week and working and helping people. And I love that. There's nothing wrong with that either. But at the end of the day, if you're just searching for happiness in material things and you're not really focused in on building something that you can do that you love, life is way too short for that.
I totally agree.
So true. So true. Hey, what about, okay, so you know the people in life who are perpetual dreamers, right? Just, they're always, you know, there's a silver lining in everything. There's a pot of gold at the end of whatever they're doing, but they really never end up getting to the dream that they actually aspire. Do you have some suggestions for that kind of person?
Yeah, I'm kind of myopic, or, you know, the ignorance is bliss, you know,
sure.
A little bit. Yeah. And I am not one to say, hey, you know what, you're positive, you're happy, and things aren't going anywhere. Hey, if it works for you, it works for you, right? I'm okay with that. But at the end of the day, there are times when you have to be realistic about what's going on in your life. And so for me, one of the big things I teach is the pathway to freedom. And it's like analyzing the nut balance. What, you know, what do you need to live? What do you need to survive? Most people never do that. And so somebody that's always optimistic, sometimes they don't want to see that. They don't want to see the bills. They don't want to feel the negative. And it's almost like a cover for the desperation. Like the cheesy positive is almost the cover for they're really desperate inside, right? So you got to be honest with yourself. You know, I believe that you can create. That's why we're here. I believe you can have a wonderful life. But you've got to be honest with yourself from the beginning as to what you want and what do you want to do. Anybody can want $1 million. Anybody can want to be eternally happy. But is that really going to happen, right? And winning the lottery or this cheesy happiness thing? No, you have to be honest where you're at in your life currently. You know, if you're making $20,000 a year and you're like, I need to make $1 million next year and I'm going to do it no matter what because I joined Amway, you're in for a rude awakening, you know? And so I'm trying to, I think the thing we have to do is get people just to be honest with mm-hmm. where they're at and work from there.
It's so true. I think people get wrapped up in what they should do or pressure or any of that, and then they're ultimately not happy.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, the only time that we have is this moment that we're all together right now. So, you know, to get way caught up in the future or start thinking and dwelling about the past and becoming a victim, that does nothing for your life. It does nothing to move you forward. And, you know, mm-hmm. like I said earlier, you know, life is too short. I mean, thousands of people last night went to bed and didn't wake up. And we did. And that should be enough to motivate you to get clear about what you want to do. Spend a little time. I mean, people spend more time on their wedding. This drives me nuts. They'll spend months and months on their wedding to get the invitations right and the food perfect, but they won't sit down for a weekend and spend it on their life.
Wow.
And that's why I tried to make this process so simple mm-hmm. that they could do it in a weekend, you know, or a couple hours a night to get at least a life plan, I guess.
So is that?
Oh my gosh! And their whole life savings.
Yes.
Oh my gosh! Not just so much time.
Yeah.
But people will spend all of their money on a wedding. It's just fascinating to me. Go ahead, Kelly. Sorry, I interrupted.
Oh no! I was just going to say, is that one of the things that makes your book also different? Does it seem like it can take a shorter time, or are there other benefits that you know makes your system
it's
different?
It's totally
from everybody else?
Different because it's all about clarity, and that's what the process is about. Like I said, my mistake is, and it wasn't a mistake, I love my teachers. I love Les Brown. I love Zig Ziglar. I love Tony. I think those guys are amazing. But as I was growing, nobody ever said in a book or in a CD or audio cassette, hey, what do you really want? Let's slow down here a little bit. You know, I'm using neuro-linguistic programming and neuro-social conditioning to get all these things, and I'm just getting more misery in my life. And so the book is different in the way that it helps people process that initial, okay, finally, I have a plan. I say it like this. It's like if you've never balanced your checkbook or you have an unbalanced checkbook for like a couple weeks, mm-hmm. you're sitting there and it just feels terrible, right? You got bills coming in. You don't know how much money you got. You're writing checks. So you finally get it balanced. And even if you don't have money in there, at least you feel good. You have a plan. It's clean. It's organized. This does that for your life.
Okay, I have a funny little commentary here on balancing a checkbook. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
Okay. So I am like, even though I love numbers and I was like, actually was really great at math because I had to compensate for numbers dyslexia. So I worked really hard to not let that be a handicap for myself. I hate balancing checkbooks. So my system, I have always rounded up usually by much more than the cents, like a dollar or two. So when I'm balancing my checkbook, then if I like had a, let's say it was a check for $25.27, I'll deduct $28 or $29 uh-huh. from my actual balance. So at the end of the year, I have like a holiday fund for presents for people. It's always like $1,000 or $2,000 more than I actually thought I had in my account. Now, is that ridiculous?
Love
it's hysterical.
That. I think that's fabulous.
I think it's awesome.
That is so smart. I
and
love
it's so
that.
Funny because even though I know that I'm doing it, like I know that this is not the actual right amount that I'm deducting, but it's like, okay, I don't know how much it's going to show up for at the end of the year. So I just, it always makes me laugh. It's like the silliest little quirk.
But I think that's so cool.
But it's awesome. That's being creative. I think that's great. You know, that's a little life thing right there. That's a fun life thing that takes something you hate, balancing a checkbook, and actually makes it fun because you know you're going to get a reward at the end of the year.
Exactly.
JV, you sound like so much fun. I have a random question for you. What did you like to do as a kid? That's what I want to know.
Good question.
Me? Mm-hmm. As a kid? You know, it's funny. This is one of my exercises in my book. I mean, I always like to take people back to their childhood because I think that's where you find your passion.
Yeah.
I was, you know, it's the funniest thing because you hear me. I'm a pretty energetic guy. I was actually very isolated. I was the only child, and I lived out in the, kind of not in the farm, but out near farms, and there weren't a lot of other kids around me. So I'm actually a very introverted person. And as a child, I was a Dungeons & Dragons kid. I read a lot. I was kind of a nerdy kid, but I played sports too. So sports and Dungeons & Dragons. I was
That's
a weird so cool. guy.
That's
I
a good combo.
That's
wow.
great.
And it's funny because I would have thought extrovert all the way.
And I'm not. I mean, in fact, I tend, you know, I speak a lot, and I'm on stage, I'm comfortable. I'm in my kind of home there.
Uh-huh.
And then I like to get away. I don't know what happened. I just, You know, it's been kind of that way my entire life. I love people, the right people.
Yes.
Sure. You know, and there's a lot of wrong ones out there, but I just like to be in my cave and just disappear. So that's what I tend to do. I think that's why I like golf so much, because I'm kind of out there alone with a few people and kind of out in the green grass and just away.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, introversion and extroversion is so misunderstood by people. It's not that introverts don't enjoy people or that extroverts only enjoy being with people. It's simply that what I've understood it to be is that introverts refuel better on their own and extroverts refuel better around other people. But both still need alone time and both still need people time.
Exactly.
You're 100% correct. And I think that's the difference. So, you know, like I was at an event, I spoke at my Sean Pless speaking event for writers a couple months ago, and they had a upstairs that said, if you need to recharge, go upstairs, you know, and that's where I spend my time. So you're 100% right. It's the way to recharge.
Exactly.
So I'm curious, what did you actually get your PhD in?
I did a non-traditional thing. It was in metaphysics, and it studied the world of religions out of Alabama, and I just wanted to kind of get something different than the traditional. I went through all traditional schooling, and I just didn't feel like I was getting anywhere. So I went through this school, and I really appreciate it. I did a dissertation on business and metaphysics, which was really unusual. I probably had the biggest library of business and spirituality, because I bought every book that I could possibly find on the subject. And believe it or not, there is a lot of them. But, it was an unusual thing that I took a step in that direction. But at the time in my life I did that, I needed to find some peace. I was a business guy, a hard-driving business guy, and I really needed to find something that I could buy into a little bit that would change my life. And so for me, like A Course in Miracles, a lot of that has come into my life and helped me a lot. You know, I can choose peace instead of this. And I really believe that that's what true success is now, is that peace, happiness, joy, and love. And that's a hard thing for me to say as an old football player, you know, a guy.
Right.
You know, I can't get manicures or pedicures where I'm from, you know. So it's funny. I'm now this big peace guy, and it's because I studied a lot of things. I got into Krishna, and the Bhagavad Gita. There's a lot about ego and separation and really understanding why we're here. And that's why I went that direction.
Oh, that's awesome.
I love the name of your book, because I feel like it's just so beautiful. It has that spiritual twist. And so it's like you can sort of create this plan, but in a spiritual way. I love that.
And Kelly, I think you're going to... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Dr. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think Kelly's going to agree with me on this, because we're both really traditionalists about expression and how we express ourselves in terms of writing things down. And I love this part in your book called The Power of the Pen, and how important... you say it is for people to really articulate themselves in a written form. Can you say more about that?
Oh, yeah. I think it's huge. I journal constantly. I now have moved, believe it or not, this is going to be crazy, but I went to the Apple Pencil in the iPad, which is really crazy because I'm very tactile. But it's just, there's something spiritual about writing. In fact, before this book, I had written a couple other books, and my first book was a big failure. I talked about it in the book. There were spelling errors, grammar errors, and I got D's in grammar. So I had this real phobia with writing. And I went to a great writing coach, and she said, "JB, let's look at your history." So she took me back to third grade, and I got held back in third grade. Mm-hmm. And the reason I got held back is I was a little small, and my parents wanted me to play sports. My dad played football, pro football. My mom was a great athlete. So they held me back, which really affected me.
Yeah.
And I used to hide underneath a desk.
Aww.
And I would write with a pencil. And she said, "Can you visualize anything for your past?" And I said, "I just remember being sat under there by myself and writing with this pencil." And she says, "You know what I want you to do from now on when you write? I want you to crawl under your desk, take a pencil and a piece of paper, and I want you to start writing." And so that's how I start a lot of my writing sessions now.
Wow.
It's crazy, but it connects me back. And she says, "Just tell that kid's okay. Everything's going to be fine." And you connect to the muse like you wouldn't believe.
So, that's
it
amazing.
Really works well.
That's incredible. Wow.
That's awesome.
I think a lot of both Dr. Deborah and my patients, like they don't realize how much childhood traumas, so to speak, can really, really affect you in the present, and we can't figure it out. And it's, you know, and that's so beautiful that you were able to kind of dial in and realize, wow, yeah, that kind of makes sense, and this is what happened. So good for you.
Well, that's why we need therapists and doctors and people that, you know, and personally, I believe licensed therapists, you know, if you can go, coaches are great, but sometimes you need that next help, right? And that next step. And I think, you know, I think one of the things we have to always remember that it's okay to ask. Here I am, a big business guy. I've got a very successful business. I couldn't get over this writing thing. And so I asked one of the best writing coaches in the world to say, I need your help.
Yes.
You know, and she totally changed my life, because now I love writing. I'm getting ready to do my next book with A.S. And I'm just a happy person because of it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that just, you know, again, for our audience, it's always helpful to just sort of distinguish, like, what's the difference between a coach and a licensed therapist? It's not that therapists don't do some form of coaching, but usually psychotherapy is helping somebody go through the roadblocks that prohibit them from being able to actually utilize all the skills and tools that coaches can provide.
Thank you for that. And I think that's really important people understand. And my big thing is, if you need help, ask, you know, and there's licensed people that are amazing and there's coaches that are amazing. Find what is the most important thing. And I just see so many people afraid to ask.
Yes. Of course. Well, I think we're taught in a society that asking for help is kind of wimpy and you can do it on your own and, you know, pull yourself up from the bootstraps and all of that. And I think it's just really hard for a lot of people.
Especially for men. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Like, men have such a hard time with that. And no wonder, because, like, you're really, when you say a wimp, you're also, like, emasculated in your mind if you ask for help.
They can't
It's a really, really bad state in society with that, because it's like life is too short once again. I mean, we need to be, happiness is the most important thing, right?
Yes.
That's, and not the only thing, but finding that peace and joy is what I want to see more of. And that's really my focus, has been the focus the last couple of years.
Well, I was going to say, men can't even ask for directions. How are they going to ask for a therapist?
You're 100% right with that one.
And I don't know if the stats have changed, but historically it's always been 3-1 for females to males in terms of seeking help with counselors and therapists.
Yeah, it's tough.
I would agree. I mean, most of my audience in coaching, you know, I've been doing it for years, you know, not really rocked it on iTunes. We've got a huge lift and, you know, things, and it's, we're 80% female. Though I'm creeping into the millennial market, because obviously I'm in lifestyle design, but I'm also on the spiritual side. But yeah, we are still 80% women. I tell all the guys I know, I'm like, you are missing out. You need to go to a Hay House conference or to one of mine.
Yes.
You're going to these bars and stuff. You're insane. These are where all the awesome women are.
There you go. And I remember too, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, JB and Kelly also, that, you know, when you're trying to seek a publisher for your book, they want you to be writing more toward a female audience, because they're the ones who buy the self-help books.
That's such a good point.
Try to make it gender non-specific. They're like, no, this is for women. This is for women.
Yeah.
So, you know, your book is really written more for both, which is great. How did you convince Hay House about that?
Yes, that's a great question.
Well, I'm very blessed, because I've got to know Reed Tracy, who's the CEO of Hay House, probably one of the best guys I've ever met in my life, just salt of the earth. And, you know, one of my mentors was Dr. Wayne Dyer. And, you know, Reed had me come to a writing conference and pulled me up on stage with Wayne, which just totally shocked me and blew me away. Wayne's obviously gone now, rest in peace. But, we just hit it off, and he said, "Hey, you know, you've got this audience, you've built it. I want to do a book with you." And so Reed's been just awesome. I don't have an agent or anything. I work directly with Hay House. They're just an amazing group. I'm excited.
Love their books. I love all of their books. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And they do a great job supporting their authors, I have to tell you. I mean, most of the authors work together and they help. And I think a lot of that goes back to Reed. He's just done a wonderful job as you know, helping with the company there.
And I'm curious, on your personal life, are you married? Do you have kids? And has that factored into any of this?
That's a great question, because, yes, I'm married. No, I don't have kids, as I chase my 95-pound therapy lab. I just got him certified for therapy, which is just insane.
Oh.
He's my kid.
Uh-huh.
He's running around with something in his mouth right now. But no kids. And that does play a big role, because I think there's two blessings in life. I think children are one of the biggest blessings in the world.
Uh-huh.
And I think not having children is a blessing also. So
it's true.
You know,
Kelly
so I
will agree with that for today at least.
Exactly. No, but I think
I heard your intro.
No, yeah, no. I mean, I think that's a great way to look at it because they are blessings. And then it's on the other hand. I mean, I think there's a lot of pressure to have kids, and what's wrong with you if you don't have kids? But I do. I think there's something, you know, really beautiful about just you being with your partner and, you know, and exploring life, you know, through that, just the two of you.
Yeah, and there's decisions that have to be made at some point in your life, and that's where I'm 47, so I'm at that age, you know, and, mm-hmm. and you move on. And I think there's a lot of people that struggle with both of those. I think there's a lot of people that struggle with, oh, I got to have a kid or I'm not going to be happy, or I've got
yes.
to put it in the world to repair this marriage. And I don't think that's right either, you know. I
yes.
think you've got to find what really drives you. And again, I think children are the biggest blessing in the world, one of them, you know. I think not having, but mm-hmm. I do love children. And
yeah.
That's what I think, you know, people need to make their own choices when it comes to that, not because they think this is going to bring them happiness again.
Sure. That makes sense. Always. Yeah. And I also think children are the biggest spiritual teachers that I've learned for sure.
Yeah. And I'm doing therapy with Neil. Neil's his name. He's a big dog. So we do hospitals and libraries, and it's very rewarding for me to go work with the children.
Oh, that's
lovely. Well, you're talking to two extraordinary animal lovers, so
beyond
that's amazing. And should we say it yet
yes.
again, Kelly? Poor Kelly.
No problem. I'm totally proud of it.
Was from her dog Moose.
My dog Moose is my only vaginal birth, is what I say, which is the truth. He the one came via C-section, the other came via surrogate, and my dog was the only vaginal birth. He's the
awesome.
Best.
I love it.
My dog
I love it.
Is the. He's also a therapy dog, and he is just. Yeah. I mean, I always say, if I ran away, I'm taking him, and peace out to everybody else.
There you go.
Yeah, that's my boy. He's here now. Well, we lost one 2 years. Well, it was about a year and a half ago because Neo's now a year and a half old, and we said we'll never do it. We're not going to do it again.
Aww.
And then Neo came into my life 2 days after.
Oh my God! Really?
Wow.
Yeah. So we're big. We're big dog people. The house is, when you lose them, you know, they're angels, and they're only here for a short time, and that's the hardest part of pet ownership, you
yes.
know, is when your angel goes. And they're so angel, but the house is just so quiet, and
yeah.
I just can't handle it.
Yep.
I can't handle it.
I get it. I completely imagine, yeah.
And if we were a television show right now, I'd be able to show you my two orcas, which are my two black and white cats, but they are the size of orcas. They are helping me nurse my back by lying next to me on top
are.
Of my calendar, on top of the TV remote, my books, and my telephone. And they're lined up like we're just like a little three-pack here across.
You need a selfie. Can you take a selfie of that?
They know you're in pain, you know? It's awesome.
They do. They're so loving. They're so amazing.
Yeah.
They're so awesome.
I think it's metaphorical that they're lying on the calendar to sort of say to you, relax, don't do any
relax.
Work.
Relax, exactly. You don't touch any of these things. We'll
exactly.
just keep you calm. They're so sweet. And, you know, also what you were saying, JB, about kids, I think it's really, you know, I always feel so much compassion for people who truly make a decision to have children and they're not able for various reasons or they can't afford infertility. But it's always also very frightening to me, people who just have children because they're, quote unquote, supposed to do the two-car garage, the house, the picket fence, and two kids, but they don't really want them. They don't really have the instinct or the interest in really parenting them. And so we have all these neglected, abused, abandoned children out there. That's just so frightening. So I applaud people who either make the choice not to have children or, you know, if they couldn't have them, to make peace with that.
Right. Exactly.
It's really crazy when you think about it. It's kind of like the old thing, if you think God doesn't have a sense of humor, then just tell him your plans, right? I mean, some people
yes.
want to have kids, and they can't, but yet some people, they just have them because they don't even want them, and they have them. It's crazy sometimes.
Absolutely. We are talking with J.B. Glossinger, the author of The Sacred Six, the simple step-by-step process for focusing your attention and recovering your dreams. Your book just came out early in May, yes?
Yeah, it just came out early May, and we've been having a lot of fun with it. It's really helping a lot of people. I did I want people to get the concept. So one thing I did that's a little different than most authors is I did a free 6 module course that launches every 2 days. It's meant to be done, you know, you can do it over a weekend or over a couple of days, and that explains all the concepts. I did it totally free for anybody that buys the book because I want people to get the concepts. I want them to read it and actually use this process, and we're seeing a lot of results already, which is awesome.
That's incredible.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I love your energy, JB. I knew it from the moment you picked up the phone. I can just tell. You have wonderful energy.
Thank you. Well, we need to give it to Dr. Deborah because she's healing up. So let's send some over there.
Exactly. That's the truth. That is
thank you. But this was actually very uplifting. And it did help that I went to the chiropractor right before the show. So thank you. Yeah. It's kind of back pain can be pretty brutal. So anybody out there that has it, boy, I understand. Every time you see somebody, you know, hunched over and all that, it's like, oh, I know what you're dealing with. It's just so tough. But give us
pain is people in pain. That's just another one of my compassions. Unless you've been in it, you don't realize when people fight that day in and day out, it's a tough thing.
Well, you know, I can really relate to some people who really just, you know, if they really want like a relaxing retreat and they don't want to do anything, then kind of not that I want the pain, but sort of lying around and kind of doing nothing would be great. But I'm just not that person.
Right.
So for me, it's so hard. But that's why, you know, so I got my continuing ed yesterday, some of those. So that was good. And, you know, doing some other things. And I'm always so grateful, too. A lot of my clients are really flexible and they're fine with doing, you know, sessions remotely, which is
fabulous.
Really nice because it's nice to have the connection. Like we're all, right? We can only hear each other auditorily, but there's still this vibe that we're all here together enjoying each other's presence.
100%. I love it.
So, JB, we're almost out of time. Can you tell our audience where they can find your book, where they can find you, all that good stuff?
Yeah. So my last name is Glossinger, and it's my last name. So GLOSSINGER is my site. And the Sacred Six is just Sacred Six with the six instead of spelling it out.
Mm-hmm.
So sacredsix.com, and that's where they get the free course and everything. But that's the easiest way to find me, just with my last name. I'm all over. Morning Coach is my Twitter and all that stuff.
And really fast, can you just give us like a quick rundown on what your morning coaching is about? I know it's a daily podcast, and it's been downloaded 17 million times. So can you give us a quick rundown?
Yeah, I'll be real quick. Yeah, it was all based on getting a system in place because I was having trouble reading all these books. I couldn't find one system to do every day. And everybody said, you need to do 30 minutes of something positive every day. Well, I couldn't find it, so I started recording myself. And so that's what I put out to the world, and now it's become a big membership community with thousands of people around the world. And every day I do a 15-minute message, and we charge $30 a month, and we have tools and community, and we got people all over the world. It's a really cool thing.
That's
beautiful.
Incredible.
That's awesome. How exciting.
Well, thank you so much, and contact us when your next book is out. We want you back on.
Okay, awesome. I love it. You guys are awesome. Dr. Deborah, heal up, okay? And thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
I'm feeling better already. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Awesome.
Bye-bye. He's so sweet. Wow. What a kind soul.
And we were sweating yesterday because we hadn't heard back from the publicist. Thank goodness. We found the way in. That's what you got to love websites for, right?
Exactly.
I went to that website and there he was and they responded back right away. Yeah, he was great. So, yeah, anybody who was listening today, pick up a copy of The Sacred Six, The Simple Step-by-Step Process for Focusing Your Attention and Recovering Your Dreams. It's a great, simple read. It's awesome. Yay.
And next week, we can talk about all things career, which is kind of related. We'll kind of piggyback off today. We have Larry Brahman, who is the Global Career Consulting and Placement Fellow. So we can talk all about, you know, your career questions. Super, super interesting. I always found that really interesting because I've done a million careers. So,
Okay.
Oh my God.
You know, one of the things that is nice about when we have guests like that is that that's kind of outside of both of our professional league. Like I'm not a career counselor and I don't think you have much training in that, do you?
No, I mean, just, you know, I can help people try to find their passion.
Sure. Yeah. But I think what he's going to help us with too is understanding what the different aptitude testings there are out there and different resources and websites and things where people can, you know, get a handle on it. Because there's, you know, it's really tough. They say now that something like every person, you know, who has a full, long, rich life is going to go through approximately five careers
really?
In a lifespan. Five.
No.
Historically,
way.
What was it? One career, you get that job with that pension, you're there for 30 years.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And then you retire and then you figure out what the hell you're going to do with the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Which for some people is 20, 30 more years.
Exactly.
So the idea, though, that we actually should be thinking in terms of, okay, well, we'll retire from that career only to re-enter into a whole different realm is very exciting, I think.
Very exciting. Wow. gosh, I remember hearing that you change your major every four or five times before you graduate college. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, of course, especially in this day and age. I think it's so frightening and scary for people to know what they want to do. So many people end up in minimum wage jobs after finishing a four or five year college degree.
Yeah.
Even after graduate school, it's kind of frightening. So maybe he can shed some light
on that.
Yeah, so, okay. So please follow us on Twitter. What's that sign called? The at sign.
Exactly.
Just the at sign.
Yeah.
At Doc Therapist One.
Perfect.
At Doc Therapist One. Absolutely. Uh-huh. That's on Twitter. And please visit us on our website at docandtherapist.com. And we love your emails. So send those to us. And Kelly, I'm sorry that I missed your face today, but I love you. And I hope you have a great week. And to everybody else, have a great week.
You too. And you rest up. Listen to
those cats.
All right. See you next week.
They're so serene. Okay. Love y'all. Right. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.